Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got a great show. You know, there's so many crazy things going on right now. I thought we'd just do a little bit of news just to give people a heads up. You know, they're having a lot of earthquakes down in California. Marina Del Rey had some. They've got some major fish kills down there over and over again. And Louisiana's got its sinkholes. There's other sinkholes all around the world appearing. And there's, South Africa's got some big sinkholes. Oz, Brazil. There's just large chunks of oceanfront property just falling into the ocean lately. So, you know, there's some crazy things going on. And we've also got some crazy things happening in Seattle as we speak. And I wanted to cover those. But I'm going to see if we can play this earth groaning video, or sound. I shouldn't say video. It's an audio. So you can hear the sound of this strange noise happening in Seattle, and it's going on as we speak. So anyway, people say it's kind of off and on. I don't know if it's back on again, but hopefully we can play that sound. So I wanted to kick that sound on just so you can hear what's going on. But looks like, well, I just got a message, so it's going to be a little while to get that one on. We're going to have to wait a little while for that. We're having trouble with it. But we'll go into that later. I'll get a cue when we can get that on and play it. But anyway, there's some major earth groans going on. And that's, you know, speaking of those, I'd like to bring, you know, our next guest on the show, Kelly LaShaw. And she's the author of Liquid Mirror. And she's a co-author of Surfing the Transformational Waves of 2012. And these earth groans, I believe, are those transformational waves. So without any further ado, I want to bring Kelly on the show. Kelly, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. You know, I'd like to start with sharing the deep gratitude I have in my heart for the work you're doing. I just discovered your work a couple of days ago, and I'm just blown away by the profound opportunity that you're giving to people.
Yeah, it's quite interesting here. It's, yeah, hopefully we can keep going. We're having some major challenges here. The seems the powers that be are not really happy with the work we're doing here, and would like to see us go away. But I'm sure they're pretty much out of time. You know, they've run out of time, and things are changing way too fast. And I don't think they're going to be successful in any way whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I can't see it either. Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to get your take on, maybe we just go right, jump right into 2012 and what you see unfolding, and as well as the, maybe you could comment on these incredible earth groans that are going on that we're going to play a portion of it a little later on the show. We're having trouble loading it right now, but it'll be up, you know, later on the show and we can play it. But I'm curious to get your take on these earth groans that seem to be happening around the world right now.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard them yet, but I can feel it. I've been tuned in with her and Father Son, and they're working together in raising our consciousness and preparing for this shift. And so she's already, you know, having her birthing pains, and she's groaning, and it's a beautiful thing. It's I love being in the midst of all of this.
You know, it's funny you said that, because Father Sky, it's interesting because what I got in meditation, that these energies are coming from space. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that the earth is responding to it, and there are major shifting healing frequencies that are coming in. Mm-hmm. So it does tie into that, you know, Father Sky and Mother Earth are working in tandem here to create an event.
Yes, yes. Well, I believe it's because we're aligning with Hunabku, the center of our galaxy. And that even Mitch Batros came out lately with, they're saying that they're finding particles that are being emitted from Hunabku. And then that is going into the sun, and then that is going into us.
Exactly. Yeah, there's major cosmic rays coming in from the center of the galaxy, and, you know, as well as other rays, X-rays, all kinds of rays. And the sun is definitely responding to it. And I know we had 16 just recently. In 8 days, we had 16 coronal mass ejections, or major sun flares, with a very large element. Okay. And so that's interesting. My producer just told me that we can actually play this sound. So Yeah, let's just take a second and listen to this sound and tell me what you think. That actually is the sound of a mothership that was hovering over our area. And, you know, I wanted to use that for a comparison to some of these other sounds. And so I gave them a website. I hope they can pick up that sound. There's a second sound there. I'll see if he can play that, the second link I gave him. Or actually, it's the first link. We just played the second link. Let's wait a minute and see if he can get that second link up. But that other sound was the sound of a mothership hovering over Portland State University. And I asked him, you know, what?
State your name, please.
Jared Slater.
Trevor Anthony.
Keisha Washington.
Let me see. Looks like. Well, we'll see if we can play just the first part of it. We might be able to get the first part of it and see where that goes. Takes a little while to start up. I know when I clicked on the link, it took a minute to come on. No.
Hello, I'm Lisa Harrison, and today I'm speaking with Kelly Lashar, the author of Liquid Mirror. Welcome, Kelly.
Hello.
I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but I have looked over your website and we've managed to have one quick chat. And
yeah,
I do believe you're a woman
one.
After my own heart.
We'll see what we can
degree.
Do. But yeah, there's another link up there top at the very top. But we'll skip that one. Well, we'll see if we can come up with it later. All right, so Kelly, are you still with us?
Yes, yes.
Great. And what'd you think of that sound?
It's beautiful.
Sounded pretty interesting. The first sound was the sound of a major Orion mothership. We actually have a picture of it, and it looks like it looks like a giant aircraft carrier up there almost, with antenna and everything else on it. It's a giant golden ship, you know, a golden light ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was the noise that everybody is hearing in Seattle right now, and they're pretty shaken up by it, and nobody can give them the origin of it.
Hmm. Hmm. Well, if it's the Earth, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people talk about harp making these sounds, or it could be ET type stuff. What do you think is the source of it?
Well, you know, I've meditated on it a lot. I know that they can play games with harp and transfer sound.
Mm-hmm.
As well as emotions and everything else. They can send people, you know, into a coma or make them very irritable, you know, and send them into rage just with frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
They can create earthquakes and alter weather and do all kinds of stuff with harp.
Mm-hmm.
But, what I was thinking is that these sounds are happening all over the world right now. Mm-hmm. And my gut feeling is a lot of them, it's a combination of things. A lot of these sounds is the earth, you know, groaning. She's shifting and changing. And some of the other sounds, I think people are picking up the ships, you know, picking up these massive motherships that are flying over as well.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense. It could be both. But without even hearing those sounds, I'm feeling her shift. You know, we are of her. We are of her flesh. And so if we're tuned into that, we can commune with her and surf this whole journey with her.
Mm-hmm.
And get guidance as well.
Now, surfing this journey, I like that, you know, surfing this wave, because, I mean, there's some people that are saying there is no wave, you know, and and there's other people, they're just so attached to their you know, comfort zones or whatever, or where they are. Mm-hmm. They're saying there is no wave, and then they're just so entrenched in, and materialism. And then, you know, there's other people that are saying, you know, we're all going to die at the other end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And everyone's felt there's something in between.
Well, yes. I mean, this is a huge opportunity to be alive right now, to be incarnate right now. And those of us that are awake and aware of what's going on, there's a very specific reason for that. We chose to come here in the darkest hour of the darkest cycle of a planet. And it took a lot of courage for us to come here and wake up within it. It's a testament of the strength of our souls, and our souls wanted to experience this. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity here is to release our attachments and release our fears and expand and expand through this, because that's what we're doing, is we're expanding, we're broadening our frequency. Mm-hmm.
The what's interesting, I feel too, is that the just the way that things are unfolding here, you know, we all bought this ticket. We all bought the e-ticket, you know, the Earth ticket that's coming mm-hmm. up. And it seems some people are here just to, you know, work out a few things and maybe cross over and move on, at, you know, as an eternal soul. And some people are here for the medium ride, you might say, and they're either going to wake up and get with the program or you know, take the downward spiral. They're kind of stuck in the middle, not sure which way they're going to go. Mm-hmm. And there's other people that are just fully aware and awake and are fully riding this wave and fully aware of the energies coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's why I like to offer these tools, so that everybody has the opportunity to participate this in the most in the broadest way. And those tools are really about facing our attachments, facing our fears, and releasing them so that we don't have to suffer through this, basically.
Yeah, it seems like there has to be a whole new letting go of an old lifestyle and simplifying right now and moving forward, you know, getting in touch with nature, mm-hmm. getting your own personal God connection. And if we don't do that and we resist this, it seems like, you know, we just may get a spanking, you know, from Mother Earth herself.
Yes. Yes, this is a time for us to learn how to self-source. And this is what they try to do, is to keep us from our own source, from our own creator. So it's up to us now to claim our sovereignty back and to claim our connection with our creator. And that is our ticket home, by the way. That's our ticket back to Hunabku mm-hmm. and through this whole process.
Speaking of sovereignty, it's quite interesting. There are so many people that are standing up for their basic rights. And we do a lot of work with that. We have a lot of the cutting edge people, you know, that are standing up for sovereignty. They don't like to use the word sovereignty because that puts you in a black light, you know, but they have different names for it. Mm-hmm. But especially in the courts, you know, having experienced that myself, you know, I found out that they take a dim view of a lot of things and don't even listen to a lot of things. They have their own agendas. And, you know, what I found out is the criminal courts are actually run by criminals, you know, so that's probably why they call them criminal courts, you know, and the other courts as well. Mm-hmm. But it's just a big extortion racket, unfortunately. It has little to do with justice or preserving the peace or anything else for that matter.
Absolutely, and it's short-lived.
So as far as how do you feel about, what do you think is going to happen with these changes, as far as maybe let's go down the line and just go into the social economic changes. And then from there, you know, we can move into, you know, physical earth changes or even the spiritual changes after that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I practice surrender and non-attachment. And so I keep my focus on keeping my vessel clean, to keep my conduit clean and open. And I focus on that mainly. And I'll focus on fears and releasing fears. And however the earth wants to shift, I'm totally willing, because I'm surrendering to this process. So I'm not focused on the financial system as much and watching, you know, how the cabal is going down. That's not of interest to me. I kind of focus on the end game, and I can just see it so clearly how this is going to be played out. And, you know, when we all go through the eye of the needle, And in the meantime, our only focus to me is to practice recapitulation to clean up our relationships so that we're letting go of resentments and, emptying our vessel. So letting go of our resentments or wherever we have conflict in our lives, because our relationships are a reflection of our relationship with ourselves and with our Creator. So if we're practicing recapitulation, which means healing all of our relationships, then we're walking that path of integrity that helps us surf through this.
Uh-huh. Now, it's funny because there's a segue that just happened here. I'm actually where I'm broadcasting. I'm looking out a window right now, and this massive lightning bolt just came down and hit right across the way here. So I kind of take that as a cue that we might want to get into the earth changes a little bit.
Okay, sure.
So just maybe what you're feeling or just some of the visions, if you had visions around it or just your own gut feeling on maybe where Mother Earth is going to take this.
I feel like this is more like a dimensional shift. So to talk about her earth changes through the 3D perception, it's going to be alarming.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm all for alarming.
Yeah, but she's really going to be changing so much. And yeah. And we're talking about her shifting into a fifth dimensional being. The Incas say that she's going to turn into a star, and we're turning into homoluminous beings. So fifth dimensional beings are shapeshifters. They're creators. They're continuous emergers. And they don't feed off of each other. So I can't see the surface of the earth being this anything near what it is now.
Yeah, to get from point A to point B, there definitely has to be some changes. You know, there's an old saying, you don't put new wine into old skins. So, so we've definitely got to do some major cleanup and create a nice clean vessel for this higher, highly evolved, race to come forward.
Mm-hmm. I agree. How do you see the earth changes happening?
I tell you what's interesting is that I had a series of visions, and this was a long time ago in 1982, and I've actually written them down. And I saw the San Francisco earthquake. I saw the buildings go down, the freeways, all that. And I actually gave warning a year ahead of time on that one and a few others. But the one of the visions that I saw that really inspired me was I looked back at the earth, and she was like a mud ball. Just mm-hmm. pretty denuded and a mud ball. And when I saw that, I went, oh my God, is this where we're going to take it? But I took that as an inspiration. Look, this is what's going to happen if you don't get going with this, if you don't start creating changes and redirecting consciousness and things like that. And that's the way I saw it. That was a possibility. I'm really hoping that I just think it's like a three-way race between, the collective consciousness, nature, and divine intervention. And they're moving back and forth, jockeying for positions right now. And I'm not sure how it's all going to turn out, but I know that there are going to be some major changes. And I really feel there's going to be some ocean displacement, mm-hmm. Some rocking and rolling, a lot more earthquakes and volcanic activity, and the sun is going to continue to expand and do its thing. But all this information was given back in 82, and it seems to be unfolding, right on schedule, as well as the banksters, the coming up, coming forward and doing their total control trip, which they're trying to put into order right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just see, there's an old saying, man plans and God laughs. These guys are not frequency specific to where the planet's going. So I don't see any way possible that they that their plans are going to turn out the way they would like them to.
Yes. And, they're tired. When I tap into their energy, they're tired. They all have an overlord on top of them. It's a hierarchy of overlords. And they're tired, and they just simply forgot because they cut their source off from their Creator, and they just forgot that loving embrace is awaiting them. And when we all go through the eye of the needle, they're going to have their release as well. They're just scrambling in the meantime because they're trying to be in denial that this isn't going to happen for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just doesn't. When I think of it, as people as frequency, you know, without judgment, just looking at frequency. And we're known by our vibration, and our vibration is the attitudes, emotions, and beliefs, you know, in the world in which we live. Mm-hmm. And if these guys are filled with greed and fear and domination, and that those are all fear-based, you know, lack programs and things like that, mm-hmm. they're going to have a very dense, a very heavy vibration, and they're not going to be able to rise to the occasion. You know, their hearts are constricted, you know, so they're going to have the heart attacks. They're having all kinds of serious problems right now, and you can see it happening, you know, all over the world right now with a lot of these guys. They're you know, a lot of these icons now are in wheelchairs, and they're, you know, getting new hearts and things like that mm-hmm. installed, you know, because they didn't really use the old one, you know. And so you know, that's the way I see it. I see it's all about frequency, and the more we can release the past and dump the baggage.
Yes.
Focus on love and joy and bliss and service, the more we can raise our frequencies, and absolutely. And it's not going to affect us as negative.
Absolutely. I agree, and we're all popping out, so it's no one is going to go be unaffected by this. Everyone's popping out in this experience, and the opportunity that we have is to participate in it through addressing our fears, and a lot of people are terrified of this ascension. Mm-hmm. And even the conscious ones are if we're really honest with ourselves, we still have this innate thing. We're afraid of death. We have the fear of God in us just by being born here on this planet, because we've been indoctrinated by all these beliefs of what God is and how it's betrayed us, and we're sinners. And we have to now claim that relationship back with our Creator, so we're not afraid of falling into its loving arms, because I believe that that's what we're going to experience. We're journeying home to our Creator, mm-hmm. and doing that now by opening our heart and practicing reverence and humor, of course.
Yeah, humor is a big one for me.
Yeah. So I like talking about our fears of ascension so that we can release them, so that we can be free in this process and not be held back by our attachments to our old beliefs and our old programs.
It seems like there's two major fears as far as that's concerned. One is fear of death or endings. You know, having my own near-death experience a couple times, that's gone for me. That's no big deal. But also the fear of God and the image of God we've been given as this jealous, wrathful mm-hmm. entity nobody can measure up to or appease. And I think those two things that are things that everybody needs to address.
I agree. It's the most important piece of all of this. And it's really beautiful, because how long has it been since we've all felt the profound love of our Creator loving us personally? We've been taught that we're not even worthy of that love. So as we heal our lack of self-worth issues, we expand our hearts and live in reverence, it fills us up. Mm-hmm. It's an invitation right now. The sun is inviting us to open our hearts to experience this love.
Yeah, exactly. I think if we understand where the wrathful God image came from, and I've spent a lot of time on that and written books about it, that, you know, in the ancient past, there were some jealous, wrathful, godlike beings here that, you know, pulled all kinds of shenanigans. And there were some very loving, service-oriented ones as well. So we have a split image.
Yes.
Of what God is. But then you have to go back to, okay, who created them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do they come from?
Are you talking about the Anunnaki?
Or? Yeah, well, there's more than that. It's the Anunnaki, and then there's, you know, you've got Jehovah, you got Yahweh, you've got you know, you've got the Greek gods, the Egyptian gods, the mm-hmm. Hindu gods. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got all these gods out there and all these advanced beings that have been coming and going from the earth and coming up from the inner earth, and there's just so many things going on right now that there comes a point we have to go, well, wait a second. Okay, all these things did happen, mm-hmm. but is this the image we're going to carry, you know, of God? Because whenever you have an image or a name or whatever, and you have this guy standing there with a sword or a pitchfork or whatever, you know, there's something much bigger beyond that. And, mm-hmm. and that's where I think where we need to go.
Absolutely, absolutely. And these guys, you know, they're part of the Lucifer experiment. So they chose to cut their cord off from their source, from their creator, so that they could play this role for us as our servants, so that we can experience waking up inside of the darkness.
Yeah, it seems like we need to be challenged. We need a negative push sometimes to get us to go forward, to get us to move. Or other than that, we'd just probably be just sitting around on a rock all day doing nothing.
Really?
Which isn't bad. I've done that, So it's good to do that every once in a while.
Yeah, meditation can get pretty boring if it's forever, right?
Yeah. We were joking around today. Everybody's talking about the void, going into the void. And I said, why? And they go, what do you mean? I go, it's totally boring, it's like void's boring. There's nothing there. I said, why do you think God came out of the void?
Exactly.
That's
good.
To experience itself. Mm-hmm. I always ask this question, it's quite an interesting one. I always wonder, how in the heck can you separate yourself from omnipresence?
Well, the mind has been trained to do that, right?
Mm-hmm. So, but that's just an illusion. That's a belief. There's always a lying belief. But, they talk about God being omnipresent, and I always have trouble with some certain religions. I won't say them on here. But, where they always have God as separate. The Creator's always separate from creation. Mm-hmm. They don't realize that, what was the created created from other than the Creator, because nothing else existed. But I always ask them that question, how do you separate? If God's omnipresent, how do you separate yourself? And it's quite it stumps them.
That's beautiful, because the way I've always thought about it is everything that we see is Creator. Everything we see is God. So we can't close our eyes and not see God. It's mm-hmm. It's our breath. It's us. It's everything that we see and experience.
Yeah, I just say, there's God experiencing himself as a nincompoop,
Exactly.
That works for me. But God brings some humor into it sometime. I one guy told a story once about this drunk that was really angry and very pissed off, and this other person walked by him, and the drunk just came at him because he was in judgment of him, and he had a lot of judgment and some anger towards this drunk, and so they got into quite a scuffle, and the next guy goes by and just looks at him and smiles and, beams him and walks on, and nothing happens, And he asks him, he goes, how come he didn't get angry at you or attack you? And he said, because I saw God experiencing himself as a drunk.
That's a beautiful story.
And it worked. It works a lot of times. I try to use that in every experience. We're definitely tested, mm-hmm. over and over again, because we all have our judgments and our issues and our programs going, but, if we can just hold that God light and see God in everyone and allow the differences, I think we'd just be moving in a much more positive direction.
Oh, I agree. I like to think of it as looking through the lens of unbearable beauty. And the more I practice living from my heart and embracing my Creator's love within me and my love for it, everything I see is unbearably beautiful. I'm in awe of everything that I see, every person that I see, every nuance within nature. Within the depths of inside of people's eyes, seeing the brilliance of their souls and seeing their highest capacity and pulling it forward out of them. I just love this work. I love being present here right now.
Yeah, I agree. We just spent some time up these lakes, these beautiful lakes up at the base of Mount Adams, and just swimming and canoeing, and we brought a little windsurfer up there. We're paddling around on these lakes, just looking at all the fish and everything else in there. And you get through, with the playtime, and you just sit there and stare at it, and you just go, God, this is like a painting. This is a total work of art. And always when I look at things like that, I just go, just the way everything was placed here, and where the trees are, and the island, and just the lake, and it's almost like it's like this design, like who laid this one out,
Oh yeah,
who created this scene, and and you just get these huge energetic downloads when you just you get out in nature and start pondering, you know, how this all came together.
Oh yes, it's mind blowing. Really, it's just such a wonderful. It's exhilarating. The more we tap into it, and that's what we are doing. We're claiming back our Garden of Eden. We've been taught that we've been kicked out of the garden. So everybody that believes that, they don't see the garden. Uh-huh. And now we're living in the garden because we have the lens to see it.
I think even they asked Jesus that question, you know, they said, you know, when are we going to see heaven? And he just said, it's all around you. You know, they understand that it's all about consciousness and holding that consciousness. But we're working on that here at the ranch. We have a very beautiful 70-acre ranch right at the base of Mount Adams, and we're working in conjunction with the nature spirits, and we're having masters appear here and all kinds of things. And it's very balanced on every level here. And it's quite a test, though, because it's a give and take, you know, situation, because, you know, one can't have it all their way and the other one wants to have it all their way. And so we're trying to find some middle ground, you know, where we're honoring all the different levels of creation. And it's quite tricky because everybody has to adjust, you know, here and there in the process. Mm-hmm. But it's like creating something that probably once was on this planet, you know, when it was in the fifth dimension a while back. But, you know, not having that template here, we have to create a new one.
Yes, we get to create the new one.
Yeah, from scratch.
Yeah, this is what the Incas talk about. They talk about the beings that are shifting with her and shifting into humble, luminous beings, that they will be the dreamers of the new earth. So we'll be using our imaginations to create cultures based on harmony and love and cooperation. And I can see it so clearly, and it makes my heart just swell.
Yeah, that's always been my goal, is to create a template where people can come and experience, you know, all the different levels of creation and the different dimensions. And we have that here. It's a portal or a stargate, you might say. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty crazy what goes on here. Everything gets amplified basically to the max, you know. And so whatever unresolved issues we haven't dealt with keep popping up and until we finally deal with them. But on the good side too, we also have access to, you know, all the elemental realms, the UFOs, you know, the spiritually and technologically advanced ones, as well as, you know, masters are appearing here as well.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. It's amazing. Well, I wanted to ask you a question, and it showed up in one of your interviews. And people are wanting to know, because there are a lot of beings out there that are saying that they're on our side working for us, and they're going to come here and save us. They'll be sending down UFOs and teaching us how to ascend and encouraging us to board their spaceships. And how do we discern between the 4D malevolent beings and the fifth dimensional benevolent ones? How do you talk about that?
Well, it's kind of tricky because it's all about doing your homework and increasing your own inner sensitivity and learning how to heal unseen negative influences and maintain your self-authority. So those practices, when you utilize those on a regular basis, it's very easy to discern, you know, the intentions of a group or a ship even before they land. You know, you can tune into them when they're flying over and know who's on the ship and what their intentions are. And if you're not getting that bliss hit, you know, or that feeling, really good feeling, you know, but then they'll say, well, they can do that with technology too. But you can discern that too as well, you know, once you're awake. But that's my understanding of it. You know, I've dealt with different sects of the groups. I tell people, especially if you're new, you should probably shy away from any grays or reptilians or things like that, because that's a real gray area. You know, I'm not saying they're all bad or all negative, but I'm just saying that if it's very, very easy to hook into those energies and get benefits from them with a price to pay.
Yes.
So I'd like to focus on the beings that are fifth dimensional on up, that have that love and joy and bliss that they carry around, that are totally service oriented. Mm-hmm. And because that's our focus, that's what we're drawing here. It's the mind in which you seek is the mind in which you connect.
I concur. Yeah. I think of it the same way. And I and for some people, the way I describe it, because it might be so foreign to be able to have those sensitivities to sense something that's an intention behind a spacecraft. But it's just like talking to a person. Like, you can kind of sense when somebody has an agenda or their strings attached to whatever they're trying to get from the exchange.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And with non-local communication, we all know that communication, that kind of communication, is instantaneous. It doesn't matter if they're standing in front of you or on a ship or in another dimension. You can still sense the frequency and intent of an entity.
Yes. That's why we want to develop our senses, and because we're just coming out of a numb state. Humanity is waking up, from that sleepy state. Huh. And the forerunners are broadening the frequency so that everybody, the 100th monkey type of thing is happening. And so this wave is going through that's awakening all the sleepers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's some crazy things going on, because I know there's just a frequency and a force that no man can stop. I mean, it's coming in. Mm-hmm. And there are certain groups that are doing everything they can to stop it, with fluoride and chemtrails and all the other toxins they're throwing into the aspartame and you name it, and HARP and things like that. They're doing all they can to stop this shift. But if they saw what was coming, they would realize it's a mute point, and all they're doing is creating more karma for themselves and lowering their own frequencies.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. I like the way George Kavaslis talks about it. He says it's like putting your hands up in the air and trying to stop a huge tidal wave. It's not possible.
Yeah, I always tell people that. I just said, people go, well, I don't believe any of this is going to happen. And I said, well, you do have a physical body and you are on a physical planet. Mm-hmm. And this planet is going to go through physical changes. So you are an eternal soul, and that's fine. But if I said, there's two practices I want you to do if you really, truly believe that, to test this theory. And I said, one, just go down to the ocean and stop the waves. Yeah, stop the waves from coming in. And two, go find a big tree and run straight at it and then get back to me. And usually that theory kind of just goes out the window real fast.
Oh, that's great. Can I quote you on that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, feel free. But, now I do think it's possible. Like, I know some lamas and yogis, and we have people here that are shifting in and out of this dimension. They, in the self-mastery classes, people become transparent, and some people disappear and reappear. And I know some monks and lamas that do that as well. So if you're operating on that level, I would say, probably these changes are not going to affect you, because you're probably going to be able to levitate or bilocate or do whatever's necessary. But, we have to know where we're at, and not get into the spiritual ego and think we're just going to do this at a heartbeat. All of a sudden, something we've never practiced or done is just going to magically be part of our abilities.
Yes, I agree.
It's quite interesting. It's funny because as I said before, there's a lot of people out there that think they're just going to, continue, investing in the stock markets and, just continue business as usual without any interruptions, and the grid's going to keep up and stay up, and there's not going to be any problems. Gas prices are going to go down, and we can keep driving that massive SUV, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, this is a big, big subject, and I think it's just too scary for people to want to be aware of. They want to stay in denial and keep their blinders on, and in some cases, it's really just best, because it takes a lot to hold this knowledge, this understanding of what's happening, because it's, again, it's scary when you get real about it. I think a lot of people could easily go to terror and panic about the earth changes. People are afraid they're going to go down in a tsunami or an earthquake, and that's why I like talking about these fears, because if they're not afraid of their death and they're not afraid of their God, we can surrender to anything.
Yeah, and if your inner guidance, is and to me, if you have made your own personal God connection and you are connected to nature and you're moving in that direction, you're going to be guided.
Yes.
And you're going to have these feelings, hey, I don't think I want to be on the coast right now. I'm really getting, it's time to get out of here, or I need to get off this fault line, or I need to get away from this volcano or whatever. That guidance is going to come to you. And, you know, but if you're in confusion and, you know, going to the TV for all your input and, you know, and pounding down a few beers every night, you know, and going back to your cubicle, you're going to be totally caught unaware, you know, of an evolutionary process that's well underway.
Yes.
You know, and I don't think it's God trying to punish people, you know, and I don't think somebody's with a laptop, you know, taking notes going, oh, I'm not going to tell this guy, you know, I'm just going to let him get smacked by the big wave, you know, because he's a bad doobie, you know, it doesn't work that way.
Certainly not.
Yeah, it's up to us. I mean, we have to rise to the occasion. We have to awaken and we have to do our homework, you know, and do what's necessary and do our own research as well as to what's going on.
Yes, I agree. Well, speaking of which, I wanted to ask you, what kind of messages are you getting from the orbs?
God, there's so many different orbs here because we've seen some of the orbs are actually nature spirits. You can see the being inside the orb. And some are discarnate humans, and some are these like wizards. They look like Merlin on the inside, or Mary, or one of these other beings. So the orbs seem to be coming from all different dimensions, and you know, they all have different messages. But I know we've had actually Mary appear here a few times, and she's pretty much been very blatant about, you know, earth changes and shifts and that we have to get our consciousness and our environment in order. And she's not very happy at all with the church and, you know, what they've done and where they've taken things. And so, you know, if they release her real message, you know, people would hear that, would know, you know, that she wasn't happy. And the Pleiadians talk a lot about just huge changes between now and December. You know, a lot of changes, and that we really need to pay attention and maintain a frequency and live in harmony with each other. And you know, they're saying it's time to lovingly and joyously prepare on every level.
Yes. Yes. And when I commune with I wouldn't even know what to label them, but I can feel a very, very, very large number of beings that are star families that are here to support us through all of this. And what I get from them is that they're seeing that we've all been in this energetic locker, and they're saying, claim sovereignty now, claim sovereignty for the earth. That's what star seeds are here for. Claim sovereignty for her, help her break free just by claiming it and claiming our own sovereignty. It starts by claiming our own sovereignty, soul sovereignty, and claiming it for others, because there's a lot of beings that, that aren't even aware of where they are within that structure. So they're encouraging me to say, we are free already. We are free already. And that is claiming the sovereignty for all of us, because this is not an exclusive project for just the ones that are awakening. It's for all of us.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's you know, we have to, as I said before, we all make our own personal connection with Creator, Spirit, God, whatever you want to call it, and with that comes sovereignty. You know, you're a God being down here, and a lot of people say, "Well, that's blasphemy." Well, you know, I like what my Meister Eckhart said. You know, he said, "If nut seeds produce nut trees, and if pear seeds produce pear trees, what do God seeds produce?" You know, so so if we're all children of God, you know, it's pretty obvious we are going to be inheriting something when we grow up. You know,
yay!
You know, but we seem to miss that. You know, we miss that point for some reason. But you know, even Jesus said that. You know, the temple is within, and ye are all gods. And, you know, I love one thing he said. He said, "You search the scriptures in vain, for I speak of a living God." And that's the problem. You know, people have their noses buried in these books, living in the past when the Creator's all around them, and they're not paying attention to, you know, what's happening in the present moment all around them.
Yes. And isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, it's something I try to practice.
Yeah, I want it for everyone.
Yeah, and then get kicked off that one every once in a while, but I seem to get back on now and then. Uh-huh. You know, you've got a couple of really good books, and we're coming up to the end of the hour here, so I wanted to maybe give people, you know, a chance to get to find out more about you and how, you know, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you and get a hold of your books?
My website is liquidmirror.org, and it's just like it's spelled, Liquid Mirror. And my email address is kellylachey@gmail.com. And Liquid Mirror came out, I guess, about 4 years ago. And there's a lot of tools in there about on how to release your fears. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a workbook that works as a very, very intensive workshop that could last for anything between a week or a month, depending on how quickly you want to work through the material. But it literally can put your soul through a deep master cleanse. Uh-huh. And it frees you up to grow. And then the ebook is, this was a labor of love. This just came out with a few months ago. And it's to offer tools, more tools. It's just fleshing out the tools a little bit more to make it a little easier and enjoyable to surf our way through our ascension.
I've been working on an ebook myself, trying to get it done, but I keep getting distracted by the beast, you know. So, you know, having to deal with a lot of other issues around that, but hopefully I can get back on track with that as soon as possible. But the, it's quite a challenge down here. And I love that liquid mirrors, you know, it's, you know, as the magicians say, it's all done with mirrors. And there's a lot of truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I know the universe reflects back to us everything we like and don't like about ourselves, and all of our judgments seem to be, you know, mirrored right to us. It's quite a walk, you know, through this. And, you know, I have mixed emotions about that. One, I do agree that we are creating our own reality and things of that nature. But there's part of me that goes, well, you know, look what they did to Jesus, you know, and all the other prophets and masters that came here to help us out. You know, it's mm-hmm. You know, they do seem to take a dim view of people that come down here and make obvious, you know, what's going on and try to awaken the masses and empower the masses. There always seems to be an issue by the powers that be when people do come to the earth to try to awaken people.
Yes.
But the what I see about that too is that's coming to a close, you know, that whole thing, because it's not just one person going out there trying, you know, it's not just one Messiah anymore. It's like a great wave of consciousness coming through that nobody can stop. You know, you can, you know, you, even if you do murder somebody or take out the Messiahs or the enlightened ones or whatever else, it doesn't matter, because they're just going to pop into the fifth, sixth or seventh dimension and just be sending their energy right back, you know, a billionfold.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I like to think of us as being the return of Quetzalcoatl. We are the white tidal wave that is affecting this outcome. That's like determining this outcome that we choose to experience.
And I like the Native Americans. They say, you know, we are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yes.
And I always say, we're the ETs we've been waiting for. You know, which would answer your other question, because, you know, the Earth's been colonized so many times, and it's the greater family of man that's returning. It's us returning. And, you know, and there's a lot of people who are more ET in their souls than they are of Earth that are here now. So it's not that big a deal. And those higher civilizations have a deep reverence for life, you know, on all levels. So,
yeah, that's why they tried to kill them all.
Yeah. And that's why they are bringing that message again, you know, because it's time for us to, you know, see the creator in all creation and start making our own personal God connection and start treating people accordingly.
Oh, yes, I agree. Reverence is really the thing that I think I would have to say that is the foremost frequency tool that I've used that has popped me into God's love.
Mm-hmm.
Reverence to me is the doorway to that experience. Because it's an emotional relationship. It's an intimate, personal relationship. It's not a concept or an idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many different paths. It seems gratitude and just focusing on love and joy and bliss until you become it, and reverence. I mean, all those seem to be, you know, steering you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Trick is acting on it, you know, walking your talk while you're down here.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, that's not an easy one.
It's not. The path of integrity requires a great deal of self-honesty, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's times I just want to pull my hair out and run through the forest and never come back, you know, and but I understand I chose to come here and I chose all of this. And so I'm just, you know, accepting it as it unfolds.
Yes, me too.
But anyway, it looks like we're getting pretty close to the end of the hour. So if you could give your website out one more time and mm-hmm. to make sure people can get a hold of your information.
Okay. The website is liquidmirror.org, and the email address is kellylashay, KellyLashA, @gmail.com.
Great. Hey, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have to do it again real soon.
Great. Thank you so much, James.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, it looks like we're going into the second hour here. We've got another great show, so hang on. And if my producer's still awake, maybe we can pop on that UFO sound one more time and play that as we go into the second hour. And anyway, have a great evening and stay tuned. Watch the skies, listen to the earth, and pay attention because a lot of changes are happening all around us. Greetings, this is James Gillen. I'm your host, and we've got another great show. We've got Charles Eisenstein with us. He's written a book called Sacred Economics, and it covers money, gift, and society in the age of transition, which we are definitely in. And he's a teacher, a speaker, an author focusing on the themes of civilization, consciousness, money, and human cultural evolution. His writings on the web magazine Reality Sandwich have generated a vast online following. He speaks frequently at conferences and other events and gives numerous interviews on radio and podcasts. Writing in Ode Magazine's 25 Intelligent Optimists issue, David Corton, author of When Corporations Rule the World, and they are, called Eisenstein one of the group's up-and-coming great minds of our time. He graduated from Yale University in 1989 with a degree in mathematics and philosophy and spent the next 10 years as a Chinese-English translator. He currently lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and serves on the faculty of Goddard College. And we have his websites up there. It's www.charleseisenstein.net and www.ascentofhumanity.com. And those are up on the World Puja site, so if anybody wants to see those. But without any further ado, I want to welcome Charles on the show. Charles, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, James.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
You know, this is a perfect show right now because people are in transition, and there seems to be, you know, two worlds. Right now, it seems the old world is crumbling, and the old program, which is this pyramidal structure, where everybody is siphoning trillions of dollars off the top, and a new world where it's more of a unity consciousness where people are working together and less focus on material acquisition and more focus on living, you know, in harmony with each other and the planet. In this transition, I know your book covers a lot of this, but you know, what can we share with the people to help them in this transitionary process?
Well, yeah, you know, I talk about the transition on a multiplicity of levels. At the most visible level, of course, there's the transition that the planet is going through just, or that civilization is going through just because of all these crises that we're facing. For example, the financial crisis, but also the climate change crisis or the ecological crisis, soil, water, and so forth, education, healthcare, politics. And so this, I do talk about this visible level and talk about economic systems and money systems, but I also talk about the personal level of transition. And so you ask, you know, what can we really do to help people? Or I would really actually like to say, what can we do to help each other go through this transition? And so what I write about and what I speak about is the transition in our world-creating stories, our deep mythologies that are almost invisible, but that give us the answers to the questions like, why are we here? What is it to be human? What's the purpose of life? What's important and valuable in life? What's the nature of reality? These are actually culturally dependent questions. Every culture gives a different answer to them. And it's these deep answers, these deep stories and meanings that are changing today. And I think that these are kind of the substructure atop which all of our institutions, including money, are is built. And, you know, so most people are not maybe going to ever be politically active or are going to want to study money systems and policy and all that kind of stuff. But everybody is going to be participating in this transition in some way. So that might be what's most relevant to people who aren't especially interested in money systems or, you know, economy or politics or.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of where I'm at, because I went through, you know, the mainstream program. I used to be in commercial real estate, believe it or not. People have a hard time believing that one, but considering where I am now. But, you know, I went through that whole process, you know, had the big house, the fast car, you know, the, you know, all the things, you know, the boat, that everything you think, you know, to be a success, basically the position, you know, board on the, but, you know, basically, you know, I had a near death experience and realized none of this worked. It's really not why we're here. You know, it's more of a false system that's been put into place, and there's really no love or joy or bliss in it, or nothing of depth, and left that system. So now, you know, I and many others are in a process after leaving that system. Okay, how do we function now on a different level, you know, and still maintain a prosperous life, but in harmony, you know, with the with others and the planet.
Would you say that it was your near-death experience that really changed you, or was it part of other things that were going on?
Well, you know what I feel about the near-death experience is that I knew, you know, I was following my heart as a child, and I was very clear and had a lot of input, you know, and I was always helpful and service-oriented and really cared about people. And then you get that beat out of you through social consciousness, you know, and all the programming you get through school and competing and sports and all the other things, you know, you get that kind of beat out of you and you get caught up in that program. And I think what the near-death experience did for me was to actually break that program. It just totally destroyed that program and got me back to what I knew as a kid was right and correct. You know, I also got to see that there is a God, you know, as well. It's not what people think, but, you know, it's not the little old man with a beard and the laptop taking notes. You know, it's way beyond that.
Well, he doesn't have a laptop.
I imagine he could have any laptop he wanted, but, or she or whatever it was. It wasn't even a he, you know, I hate to even say that.
Okay. Yeah. So here, you know, I think that this is something I keep finding, all over the place, is that the transition, when people go through a transition like this on a personal level, usually there's some kind of experience. It might be a near-death experience. For a lot of people, it is. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be. But it has to be some kind of breakdown, some kind of collapse of the old world.
Mm-hmm. Like loss of job or,
or
divorce.
Loss of job, divorce, a health crisis, bankruptcy, you know. Could be something with your teenager, your child. Somehow or other, life has to fall apart before people change, usually. Which is one reason I think to that that has strategic implications for activists or for people who are walking around muttering about all of those selfish, greedy people in their SUVs and why don't they get it? Like, what did it take for you to get it? So I think it can kind of, it can kind of defuse this judgmentality that is actually very counterproductive when we're trying to bring change to society. Because if we're coming from that place of judgment, then people will just get defensive and actually harden their positions. And I also think that the understanding of how transition happens through collapse is useful on a social, political level too. Because I think our society, I mean, our civilization even, it seems like we could very well go through a near-death experience. We're certainly going through a breakdown, a breakdown in the health of the of the ecosystem, in the health of society. You could say we're going through kind of a divorce as community disintegrates everywhere. You could say we're going through certainly there's a financial crisis where the resources that were once so easy for us to obtain are now more difficult. And there's all these health crises, all these new diseases. So you could say that the world's falling apart.
And it seems to be an integrity crisis too. This is, goes off on a different subject, but I think that they're talking about psychopaths, how they just can't feel. They can't feel for another person. They have no feelings whatsoever. And the integrity levels on their actions are just not there. And we're starting to see that implode, at the highest levels I think there's a saying, I can't remember what it was, it's like the sanitarium is run by the psychopaths or something like that. There's an old saying. And we're starting to see that right now, that we do have people in the highest offices that are calling the shots, that have no compassion, no integrity, no reality whatsoever of any kind of a unified field, and how we're all connected. And that seems to be coming apart on every level. So it's very obvious we're going to be probably going through some kind of a collapse, either personally or socially, social economic. I think the work that you're doing is actually creating a foundation. Okay, what do we do after the collapse or during the collapse, and how do we create a different reality or a different world?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned psychopathy. I've been reading about that and studying that and thinking about that quite a bit recently for a few reasons. One is that, you can make a pretty strong case that the psychopaths are running the show. But then that framework invites us to basically see the problem as the psychopaths. And the answer then is to eliminate the psychopaths or to fight the psychopaths, because a psychopath doesn't understand anything but force. Basically, you have to stop them by force. So it invites us into a state of being, kind of an us versus them or a good versus evil mentality, that I think is actually at the root of the problem. So I've been a little bit suspicious of that level of explanation or that type of explanation. But it's true that our system does encourage psychopathy, sometimes quite blatantly.
Yeah.
It says, I mean, like economics, for example, says it actually has psychopathy as one of its foundational assumptions. It says human beings are motivated to maximize their rational self-interest. That's page one of Economics 101. Mm-hmm. So basically it says human beings are psychopaths. Like, what is it to maximize your own self-interest?
Yeah.
At whether, you know, who cares if it's your expense or not? Like, basically they're saying, yeah, we're all psychopaths. And mm-hmm. biology says, evolutionary biology often kind of seems to be saying the same thing. And then, of course, we have a system that doesn't reward, you know, that doesn't encourage pro-social behavior. Mm-hmm. And rewards like corporations, for example, are legally required to maximize shareholder value, which is measured in terms of money. So if you sacrificed shareholder value to protect the environment or something like that, you could actually be legally liable. Mm-hmm. Not to mention you wouldn't be very competitive in the marketplace. So we do have a system that encourages psychopathy. But I question the interpretation of psychopaths as people who just don't feel. I was reading a book on psychopathy, and at the end, there was a quote from an actual psychopath, somebody who scored very high on the psychopathy checklist. And mm-hmm. he said, no. He said, we're human beings too. It's just that we're more sensitive to pain than most people. So we shut it off and just let it roll off our backs. And I kind of like this idea that some people, because I don't know, when I was studying psychopathy, and probably this happens to a lot of people, you think, maybe I'm a psychopath. You know, and you kind of go back to all those times in your life where you were an unfeeling bastard, you know, and mm-hmm. Sacrificed other people's feelings, you know, and were all in ego and everything. And, you know, it's like, oh, maybe I'm a psychopath, you know. And I remembered back on those times in my life where I had been subject to various kinds of pain and responded by going numb and training myself not to feel, especially boys. You know, we were not supposed to cry, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I think, and I wondered, like, if it's just that we're in such a painful world that some people dissociate themselves from that pain and then are able to do things that cause other people pain because they don't feel it anymore.
Yeah, that's a good concept. I know a lot of times in sweat lodges, you know, you'll get people like a banker or something like that, and they come in there or, you know, somebody that's been really, you know, capitalizing at the expense of others or enslaving others or whatever, and they come in there and they have a total breakdown, and you find mm-hmm. out basically all they are is just a wounded little boy trying to impress their father, you know, there's some program in there that's running that allows them to do those things that they don't, they just don't, they haven't taken the time to do their own inner healing, you know, or work with any kind of process-oriented therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So James, did we have a topic for today? I mean, this is fun. But,
yeah, just flow wherever it goes. Okay. I was going to share one thing. I was at a place called, I believe, Tassajara. And it's a Zen monastery, basically. And they have a place where there's a river, you know, and a hot springs flowing into the river. And beautiful saunas and everything else. And everybody goes down to this river, and it's a huge water slide. And people slide down this water, land in this big pond. You know, it's just a beautiful place. And what's interesting is you go there, well, everybody's pretty much naked, you know. It's But when you go there, you look at everybody there, and there's, you know, skinny people, heavy people, you know, black people, oriental people, white people, you know, every color, every size, everything you can imagine. And everybody is sliding off this thing, going into the off the waterfall, standing around, you know, communicating, you know, there's no divisions there, really. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it was amazing. And I was observing this, and I saw this man come up, and he, you know, he looked like he came straight out of a boardroom, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think his daughter brought him there. And he stood there, and it looked like he was having a heart attack.
Wow.
Watching the people. And
yeah.
And this friend of mine was going to jump up and help him. And I said, no, don't. I said, just leave him alone right now. He's having a heart opening. He's not having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And he's having a big reality check on his whole life was pretty much in a way wasted because, you know, he's running a program that is totally dysfunctional. No love, no joy, no unity, you know, nothing in it. And walking into this reality, he just had basically a meltdown. And then finally this woman I was with, she went up to him and said, "Are you all right? Are you okay?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I just realized I wasted, you know, the vast majority of my life. And this is what's really important." So he had a total meltdown. And that's what I see is that there's people that are just caught up in a program and a reality or their small world, you know, and their cubicle and day-to-day stuff. And they haven't really been to a place where there is a template of people all, you know, hanging out in harmony, every race, every color, every size, you know, everybody just just having fun. You know, it provides...
Yeah, people playing, people not being in a hurry, people just enjoying being with each other. Like all that stuff is so available.
And I think that's where we're going. That's the world we're going towards. But the old world, I think, as you're saying, it may have to collapse. You know, it's in a process of collapse for the new world to come in.
And I think that's why it's, you know, I was talking about, judgmentality, and I think that's why it's really counterproductive to frame what's going on today as, for example, the 99% versus the 1%, because it's not working for the 1% either.
Yeah, it definitely isn't.
And this is something that triggers people sometimes. They say, "Come on, Charles, how can you say that it's not working for the 1%? They're the ones with the 100-foot yacht, you know, and all of these, you know, the 10,000 square foot house and the 6 cars, it's obviously working for them." But I think that those things are kind of substitutes for the scene that you were just describing. You know, people playing out in nature all together at ease. If you don't have that, then you're going to try to compensate by adding all of these things that you really don't need as a substitute for what you really do need.
It does seem to be, too, is when you have all those substitutes, you know, like the giant house and all the cars and the yacht and everything else, you're trapped. Those things own you. That's what I realized when I had the near-death experience. I go, "I don't own these things. They own me." And I have to keep up this outer appearance for my ego to think I'm special or I'm the upper crust or whatever, you know. And I really realized I wasn't free at all. And that these things own me. I didn't own them.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I want to also, you know, make it clear that I'm not saying, oh, that, you know, poor people should, in some sense, should be happy. Because people really are facing very hard circumstances. I mean, I can't remember the statistic, but I mean, some huge percentage of children in America go to bed hungry, at least sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like we can't minimize that.
No.
But that hunger is a consequence of our system. It's not because of any fundamental scarcity in the world. We waste vast amounts of food, and our biggest crop in America is lawn grass.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's. I mean, I've talked about this before, but I saw mountains of corn and wheat and things like that. I mean, literally mountains that were pushed aside because they wanted to keep the market up. They had just bumper crops, and they go, "Well, we have to just dump this and continue with kind of a scarcity program so we can keep the market up." And I couldn't believe it. I said, "Oh my God, that would feed the world basically." All we need to do is figure out a way to transport it and turn some of our assets into, you know, getting this out, you know, to people in need. But again, you know, most of the assets are going into the war industry or, you know, trillions of dollars going into the these crazy wars and these other programs that really serve nobody other than, you know, the people building the war toys and the people, you know, looking to grab, you know, other people's resources, basically.
Or toward the, or they're going toward, you know, sprawling suburbs and fast cars and huge houses and, mm-hmm. and all the, all these other things that don't really serve human happiness in any way.
I don't think they're healthy at all. The life, that lifestyle, especially when you put people right next to each other in little cubicles, mm-hmm. the psychic turbulence in that apartment complex, when you are sensitive, is really tough on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you don't have a place in nature you can go out and expand and relax and it's just not a healthy way of being.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was mentioning that, like, the underlying abundance that's beneath the scarcity that we experience. The reason I thought of that is because it's kind of similar to the scene that you described with all those people outside, you know, playing in the river, that a more beautiful world is not very far away. Mm-hmm. It's only our perceptions and our habits that are in the way, that, you know, between us and that more beautiful world. And it's simply a matter of maybe sometimes just, you know, taking off our clothes and getting into the water, you know, and we've been, that's in my other book, The Ascent of Humanity, the image on the cover is a painting of the Tower of Babel, mm-hmm. which I see as a metaphor for the attempt to attain heaven through working really hard to get there. Because mm-hmm. for so long, humanity has thought, or, you know, at least Western civilization has been under the operating assumption that if we only complete our conquest of nature and bend matter to our will through technology, that we'll have a better and better world and someday a perfect world. And you know, starting with the steam engine and electricity and atomic power and the computer and nanotechnology and medical miracles, and life is getting better and better, and someday our control over matter will be complete and we'll live in a utopia. And so it's just a matter of a few more inventions maybe, and a little bit more data input to get everything computerized, and then we'll have this age of leisure and joy and abundance and all these good things that have actually been available already all the time. Just like when you had your near-death experience, you know, and you realized that happiness was already right in front of your face, mm-hmm. all the time. And so I think, you know, here we are building this tower to heaven and laboring really hard to get there, sometimes looking up and thinking, well, yeah, maybe we're a little closer to the sky than when we started. Yeah. But of course we're not, you know. Of course, no matter how high you build, the sky is still
there.
You'll never get there. Yeah. And we're reaching the point now where we're just getting exhausted mm-hmm. from this tower building, and the tower is beginning to crumble. And we're just, more and more people are kind of pausing.
Yeah, the people holding up that tower are the people needed to maintain that tower are walking away. And so
that's right. Yeah. They're walking away because they see, like, that the sky actually starts an inch off the ground. Yeah. We're already there.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're taking off their clothes and jumping into the river. And they're like, we're already there.
Yeah.
And I think that one way that shows up is that people are getting less and less enthusiastic about participating in the system. Mm-hmm. A couple generations ago, people were very enthusiastic about joining the machine, you know, to somebody who is maybe intellectually oriented would definitely want to become a professor. And because they really believed in the institution of academia, it wasn't just that it was job security, but they really believed in this program where you wanted to become a scientist of some sort or an engineer. You know, kids in the 1940s and 1950s, they wanted to be engineers. Mm-hmm. And today, people don't have that kind of buy-in, that kind of enthusiasm for the project of technology. and the best and brightest are often kind of just stepping away from the whole thing. In my generation, we became slackers, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the best and brightest are always snagged up for the war industry, or, you know, to create weapons of mass destruction, you know, in a lot of different levels. It's kind of amazing. But the, you know, what I see is that, you know, there is this group, this corporate elite, whatever you want to call it, you know, that have these concepts of, you know, eugenics. We have to get down the population. They have a program of transhuman, you know, beliefs mm-hmm. that we're going to, you know, we're going to become basically synthetic robots or whatever. You know, they have all these programs they're running, and they don't realize that, that, you know, nature isn't broke. You know, nature is one of the best programs you can ever get. And why would you want to get away from, you know, having a wholesome, you know, a spiritually loving, wholesome life, you know, and living in harmony with each other, nature. And the other thing too, as I see too, is that, and I've worked with scientists, I'm privy to some things out there that, you know, we have the ability to heal almost every disease out there, including every cancer you can think of through certain formulas and energy mm-hmm. devices. You know, we have the ability, we have countergravity, we have anti-gravity, we have the ability to jump dimensions, you know, mm-hmm. in the Black Projects. We have the things for utopia, and you know, we have Earth-friendly technologies that we could use to cover all of our energy needs and transportation needs. But, you know, this is all being withheld by this group, you know, this elite group, you might say. I know it's starting to bust out. It's going to bust out all over anyway. It's going to come out. But, you know, as we were talking before, when I see mountains and mountains of corn and wheat sitting there, and when you add some kind of a transportation device that's fuelless, you know, that could transport them anywhere, anytime, bang, there's your hunger problem solved, you know, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of skeptical, actually. I'm a little skeptical of that. I think that view buys in a little bit to this kind of technology is our savior. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think about solving the hunger problem, I'm thinking more, you know, I'm not thinking in terms of mountains of grain flowing around the world with fuelless devices. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking more of like re-empowering local subsistence agriculture, where people are getting back into a direct relationship to the land.
Oh, I agree. That's exactly what we promote here, and but I was just using that as an example.
Yeah.
If we put our resources towards ending hunger or poverty or whatever, we could do it in a heartbeat, in a moment. Mm-hmm. But as you're saying, I think it does begin with the individual and learning how to create, you know, and manifest from your own center versus creating another dependency.
That's one way to look at it. I'm not sure, though, really, if you can. Yeah, I mean, it can be very empowering to say it is all about the individual and manifesting and changing yourself, and by changing yourself, you'll change the world. So focus within. That can be empowering, but also it can be kind of an escape mm-hmm. from. This really necessary, beautiful, and ultimately fun work
exactly.
to do in the world. Mm-hmm. One of the things I write about is the change in the human sense of self, in our identity. I was talking about those world-defining stories, and one of them is the story of self that says who you are. And it says what we've lived under is a story of self that says what you are is this kind of skin encapsulated spirit or soul uh-huh. or consciousness or mind that's separate from the flesh, separate from other skin encapsulated souls, separate from the universe. So you're this bubble of psychology walking around an objective universe. And the teaching that your reality reflects your beliefs, for example, which is kind of a very New Agey teaching. Mm-hmm. That's a step in the right direction, because it says that it's not just this external objective universe out there, but it's somehow a mirror of yourself. That's a step in the right direction. But I think a further step in that right direction is to recognize that, okay, changing yourself is not separate from changing the world in the opposite way either. Mm-hmm. And that the way to work on yourself is through your relationships to other people and to other beings and to the world, because you aren't this discrete, separate person, but you are actually the sum total of all of your relationships. Like, you are a relationship, mm-hmm. not a separate being having relationships, but you are a relationship. And this is kind of the foundation of all my books, like mm-hmm. economics, for example, if you are a relationship, then a different kind of economic system arises very naturally, and a different set of motivations that's very congruent to what hunter-gatherers practiced. Because mm-hmm. in a hunter-gatherer system, okay, well, yeah, you can break in.
Yeah, I've got a question. No, so anyway, like, having, you know, the center here for like 25 years, we've had some real tests, you know, on mm-hmm. every level, and working with trying to create a format or a foundation or whatever that doesn't really fit into the world as it is now, and trying to create a whole new template or a whole new reality, mm-hmm. and it's really challenging, because you have to have that within to do it. You know, you have to kind of work on that program within yourself first, or you're not going to do it in the outer world. So, mm-hmm. so, you know, we'll have people come, one person will come, and they'll have a real sense of entitlement, and mm-hmm. they think everything is supposed to be provided for them, and they don't really have to do anything other than sit around and play their flute or drums, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, another person will come in and just work really hard, and then, you know, build up resentment because they aren't, you know, the other person is sitting there playing the flute, you know, and right. it's really interesting dynamics. And it's, and, you know, there's a lot of people that, let's say, they've been raised in an affluent family, and, you know, all their food, everything was always provided for them. And they have that expectation that room and board and food and utilities, everything is going to be covered. Mm-hmm. And that's the new world, you know, and so you have all these dynamics, you know, coming together. What's so interesting is you know, putting together a group consciousness where everybody agrees, but all also remain flexible, you know, for you know, personal experiences and things like that, or personal evolution. It's a real tricky process, you know, putting something together like this.
Yeah, because you're trying to recreate something that evolved over centuries and millennia in traditional mm-hmm. cultures. And so you're bringing people together who don't have these traditional ways of cooperating and sharing and interacting and enforcing pro-social behavior. And so you're trying to recreate it from scratch with people coming in from a monetized world where essentially, you pay for everything, mm-hmm. and you don't do anything for anybody else unless you're being paid to do it, which is an exaggeration. People still do things for each other, mm-hmm. But less than they did a generation ago, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as far as just like what neighbors do for each other.
Yeah, people don't even know their neighbors anymore.
People don't even know their neighbors, yeah. But in traditional suburbia, like in the 50s, for example, if you were doing some kind of project in your yard, or you were, you know, putting on a new roof or something like that, your neighbors would come over and help. Mm-hmm. Like, neighbors helped each other out. And
oh, yeah.
We don't have that anymore. So it's, I've been trying to navigate this territory as well. As I, you know, when I go around and speak and I do events based on gift principles, and just watching all that comes up in people, or that comes up in me also when I interact with people, it's been quite a learning curve, and I think it's important, you know, that we're trying stuff out and developing ways of relating to each other and ways of serving each other that are based on our understanding of ourselves as connected beings and our, you know, and as being one with the universe. Because the money system denies that. The money system keeps us separate and puts us into competition, whether we want to be or not. It's you can swim against the current, but the current is toward atomization, toward separation, toward competition.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's tricky because you'll have one person, like I said, one person will come and they'll say, "Hey, I made $50,000, $75,000 a year." And they'll come up and they'll say, "Do you have a position for me? You know, I need this and this and this." You know, and then another person says, "Hey, I just want to come and help. You know, I love what you're doing. I really believe in what you're doing. I just want to see this. This is so necessary. I want to see this happen." And those are two extremes. And then you have people in the middle saying, "Hey, you know, let's all work together and enjoy the fruits of our labor and shift into, creationary mind and service oriented and things like that. And really focus on creating abundance here." That actually works really well. You know, it flows really well. But then you have all these other distortions in the field, you know, the field of consciousness there that are still playing out the old programs of not having any energy exchange and just wanting to give to wanting a massive energy exchange, you know, far beyond what's available.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my sentiment exactly. Just like, what do you do?
You know, but we're in a transition time, you know, and it's a time of trial and error and just learning what works and creating a new kind of society. So I don't think we could really expect much else.
Yeah, that's what I say. We're trying to let it flow organically and come together and, you know, cross those bumps in the road as we go and trying to create some kind of a unity consciousness here, you know, where we're all moving in the same direction or we have a shared desire. It's tricky.
I think as far as, you know, creating unity consciousness, people have kind of this idea that creating unity consciousness is something that you would do in, you know, a meditation studio or something like that, because it's about consciousness, which is something that happens in your head. But actually, only a little tiny part of it happens in your head. Most of it happens in the world and with your body. So practically speaking, what does unity consciousness mean? It means community. Because a community is a group of people where other people's well-being affects your well-being directly, which is different from, say, my neighborhood right here in semi-urban Harrisburg, where what happens to my next-door neighbor, who I barely even know, has no effect on my life because I don't depend on anything that he gives me. He could lose his job, he could get divorced, has no impact on me whatsoever. So I don't live in a community, at least in my neighborhood here. But in a community, if something bad or something good happens to somebody else in your community, communities are woven together with gifts. A community, you could even say, it's a group of people who give to each other and receive from each other, which means that, you know, maybe if we're in a community, I give to you, and you might not even give directly back to me, but you might give to somebody else who gives to somebody else, and eventually it circles back to me. So if you have a stroke of bad fortune, then that's one less giver in the community. Or if you discover some great new talent, then the whole community is better off. And that's unity consciousness. It's the understanding that we are not separate, that what happens to you is happening to me, that your happiness is my happiness. It's an expansion of our sense of self. And so I think that you know, maybe you get it on an intellectual or spiritual level first, but then the desire to implement that more tangibly becomes unstoppable. Mm-hmm. And so we have this migration of this convergence of the spiritual people and the activists. Mm-hmm. And you know, that we're trying to create actual manifestations of unity consciousness, which I would call community. And then there's an ecological dimension to it as well. But I think the kind of work that you're doing is, I mean, this is where it's at right now. It's how do we build a world on unity consciousness?
Mm-hmm. And there does seem to be, you know, in the beginning, when you're building a world like that, you are going to have an influx of funds and money to kick it off and to get it going, you know, and hopefully that money doesn't have hooks and controls on it and things like that. But eventually, you know, what eventually you want to get to a place that's self-sufficient, and that's either at least self-sufficient or creating abundance where it's running on its own. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's what we've been working towards here is it's kind of interesting because I have a sovereign group of rebels here, you know, uh-huh. trying to create unity consciousness. And you know, the rebel energy is good. It's what broke them out of the program and the mold. But then pretty soon you're in a pattern, a rebel pattern, where you start rebelling against the things that are good or the things that you're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. So there's so many different dynamics going on here. And you know, there's got to be a way of uniting sovereign people, you know, where everybody's sovereign, but at the same time, they're working for the whole, you know.
Well, you know, I think that there's that we've been seeing kind of a progression of spiritual realizations or an evolution of consciousness to where it was once, not too long ago, the new truth, the spiritual teaching was all that you need is within you. All the answers are within you, and look within. And that is becoming obsolete now. Mm-hmm. And the new spiritual truth is, I would call it, you know, spiritual interdependency. Or let's actually trigger ourselves and say spiritual dependency. It's the realization, I need you, that mm-hmm. I can't be complete without a community of people that can hold me in unity consciousness. It's not that some people can be in it and some can't, and the ones who are in it teach the ones who are not. But it's a transition that we have to undergo in groups, I think. And I think that, you know, I've run into people like this speaking. One man, he said, I've got it all. I run a wellness center. I'm financially independent. I have a beautiful house. Loving marriage, and you know what somebody thinks about me, or that has no effect on me. You know, I'm content within. I said, but there's something missing. This was what I had aspired to, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when we talked about it, what came out is that what was missing was real community. Like, we have a need to need other people, or to recognize our need for other people. We just can't be happy without other people. Mm-hmm. And it's because that we are not these separate beings, these skin encapsulated egos. We are interbeings. We are our connections.
It's like a drop in the ocean. You know, it's mm-hmm. You know, we need the ocean, yeah. You know, and I guess we can be a drop or be the whole ocean. It all depends on consciousness and where you, how far you expand it out, or where you draw your boundaries.
I was thinking what you were saying about you know, that you need some kind of funding or money to get a project like yours started, and then the question of, you know, are there hooks attached, strings attached, and things mm-hmm. like that. And I've thought about that in the context of my book. Actually, I write about that in Sacred Economics a bit, that ultimately right livelihood comes down to gifts, to because, and it has to do with the way that money is created in our system mm-hmm. as interest-bearing debt. So it gets lent into existence to people who are going to create even more of it, who are going to create more goods and services and sell those goods and services, which may not be a bad thing if those goods and services serve the good of society. But in our current system, so many of them do not.
And you can,
you know, and really what the planet needs now isn't more goods and services. So ordinary investment isn't going to work for a project like yours, which is actually trying to create fewer goods and services of the kind that are exchanged for money. You're not trying to convert your ecosystem into lumber. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to find things that people are doing for each other and stop them and sell them as services instead. But you're actually trying to encourage people to relearn skills that have been lost and to replace money functions with functions of service and other kinds of relationships. So what you are doing fundamentally isn't going to generate a profit for an investor. Mm-hmm. It's inescapable. Because you're not in the business of expanding humanity's domination of Earth and increasing the realm of expanding the realm of property and turning nature into product. You're just not doing that. Therefore, anybody who funds a project like yours has to be doing it with no expectation of getting even more money back. In other words, it's a gift. Mm-hmm.
And I think the same goes for people joining the community. You can't come in with the old consciousness of high salaries and I'm going to cash in here or I'm going to, you know, it's like having, you know, big expectations. You know, that doesn't work either.
Right. Yeah, because you're not going to be, you know, creating a branded service either. Mm-hmm. Because people aren't going to, and ultimately, even if you have retreats and some and things like that, the people who come there aren't going to be the kind of retreats you're going to have, aren't going to be the kind where, okay, we're going to get together and figure out how to make more money faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to have, Steve Jobs isn't going to be coming here, that's for sure. But we're not going to have, you know, people like that coming here and giving a lecture on the latest iPod, you know, or whatever else. And, you know, and actually, you know, get a portion of this, whatever sold, you know. Or I mean, there is some commerce, you know, people come and they give lectures, they sell their books. Mm-hmm. You know, they get their book sales and they get, you know, whatever's worked out, you know, as far as a speaking fee or percentage. Mm-hmm. So that does go on, you know, but again, it's not trying to create again, a major corporation, mentality or a corporation program. You know, we're trying to get more into simplifying, you know, living simply mm-hmm. and living a really good life with what's really of value.
Yeah. Although I want to make clear to anyone who's listening that I'm not advocating the abolition of money, but really what my book is about, it's about how to change money so that it's aligned with the things that are becoming sacred to us today.
Mm-hmm. Because today redirecting it.
Well, yeah, redesigning it. You know, how should money be created? Today it's created as interest-bearing debt, but that's not the only way to create money. There are other ways to bring money into being. And how money circulates and what the role of government is. And there's so many different ways that a money system could operate. And if we create it and circulate it and design it according to different principles, it could have a very different effect on society. Mm-hmm.
So I agree with that. Yeah, definitely. It's like, I see it. It's right now it, you know, it is the accepted exchange of society. So we do have to function within that. You know, we can't build everything here from scratch. You know, so we definitely still have to function with money, but as I'm seeing now, the way it's the way it's set up now, the monetary system needs a total overhaul.
Mm-hmm. And it's collapsing too. Mm-hmm. You know, we're watching that happen kind of in slow motion.
Yeah. Yeah. We're watching the rats leaving the ship right now. It seems like all the top bankers are disappearing and running to their retreats, you know, before their karma catches up with them.
But there's nowhere really for them to go.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also because we are connected beings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can go to your gated community or your private island even, but whatever's happening on Earth will find you there.
Yeah, they created their own jail, basically. You really think about it. You know, if you have a long trail of abuse, you know, to humanity and the Earth, no matter where you go, you know, that trail is going to catch up to you. And just by your nature, you're going to, you know, draw to you the lessons you need. Your soul is going to bring them to you for your own evolution. So, yeah, there is nowhere to hide. I mean, you can get your underground bunker and get your guards and everything else, but when the energy comes in, it's going to push up all your nonsense. And who would want to be underground with a bunch of tyrants and control freaks? I mean, would you really want to be hanging out with those guys when you know, in the middle of these huge energy shifts that we're going through?
Yeah. Yeah. It's becoming more and more obvious that that the only security that you can have going into turbulent times comes from what you've given, from the gratitude that you've created in the world around you, and not from what you can control. Even if you had bars of gold in your bunker to hire guards to prevent people coming and taking your gold, you know, and even if you're then, like, at some point the guards are going to say, hey, why don't we just take this guy's gold? Why should we use guards, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to work.
No.
And this, I think that there is kind of a sense of, it's a mixture of panic and fatalism that's infecting the power elite, at least some portion of them. Some of them are still clinging to the pretense that everything's going to go back to normal. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are really seeing the writing on the wall. They don't necessarily know what to do about it, but they are not in control, not in the way that kind of these conspiracy theories hypothesize that this is all going according to plan and so forth. The mood is one of kind of powerlessness and responding to one unpredictable crisis after another and just buying a little time, hoping that in the 1 year before the next default, hoping that economic growth will rise again and we'll be able to grow ourselves out of debt. But this is a forlorn hope. Mm-hmm. And the unpredictable, nonlinear nature of reality is overwhelming all of the control mechanisms from that the power elite and whatever other entities you believe in can wield.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, my understanding of it comes from, you know, the vibrational lifting or, you know, the rising frequency of the Earth, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you could just call it evolution. There's different names in it. But eventually, you know, that consciousness is no longer frequency specific. It's no longer acceptable or you know, that way is just not going to be acceptable anymore in the future. So it's a dead end. It can only implode and crash eventually, and basically the karma and the reaction, whatever you want to call it, is going to come back. It's just inevitable. And that's what I see. You know that old saying, "Man plans and God laughs." You know, I always think of that because these guys are very, very clever, but they're not wise. Because first of all, they haven't even figured out karma, and second of all, they haven't even figured out unity consciousness or the unified field. You know, any of the top physicists can tell you everything is connected. You know, there's nothing.
But you know, I think it's really important to realize that on a deep level, those guys who don't get it, are ourselves. Like, we're also those guys who don't get it.
Oh yeah. I used to be one of those guys. That's why I can say that.
But I'm, what I'm, what I'm, yeah. But what I'm seeing, though, is that each person is pioneering a slightly different piece of the territory of of unity. And that I find that if I really pay attention, I have something to learn from almost everybody that I meet.
Yeah.
Like everybody is kind of getting it in some different way. And that really this transition is, it is a group phenomenon, that each one of us has something to learn and something to teach to everybody else.
Oh yeah, I get that even from the bugs. You know,
yeah.
You know, I tell people you can, you know, just watch nature. You can even learn from the bugs. You know, look what they're doing. I mean, look, watch the ants. You know when you're going to have a hard winter. Just look how tall the anthill is. You know, watch how they work together. You know, you know, there's so many different things you can learn. And you know, in nature, sometimes you have to set boundaries. You know, if you got a hornet coming after you, you know, you might have to slap it down.
Yeah.
You know,
but I think it's, I think it's, you know, it's quite PC today to say, yeah, we have a lot to learn from the ants and from nature.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say, well, we have a lot to learn, here's a banker who's, I'm going to talk to this man. He's a banker and he has $100 million in the bank. And do I have a lot to learn from him too? Or do I have anything to learn from him? Or is he just one of those people who doesn't get it and he's less evolved and doesn't get unity consciousness, but I do? I think that that attitude is itself the opposite of unity consciousness.
Well, he's got abundance down and maybe he can start using that, you know. You know,
and maybe, yeah. And a lot of, you know, a lot of times, you know, you get somebody who's, well, like you were, you know, who has a change of heart for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I mean, there are people out there with tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars who want nothing other today anymore than to use those resources to create a more beautiful world.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people having that change of heart.
Yeah, I'm all for one of them dropping in on us, but we had a couple. Basically, we had some people here but you know, there's all these other dynamics involved in that, and
well, it's tricky. Yeah, there's so much attached to money. You know, they come in there and as soon as there's a lot of money involved, people begin to change.
Oh yeah,
and it brings out greed, you know, and it brings out all of these old wounds. So it's not so simple. Like if you're really wealthy, just to start throwing money at somebody.
Oh yeah,
like that sometimes can destroy a beautiful thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're coming up the end of the hour, and I don't know if there's anything. You know, we're just got maybe less than a minute left, but I know we've got your website. Is that the best one for people to get a hold of you? Is that the Charles Eisenstein?
Go to charleseisenstein.net, and that has a portal to the other websites.
And there they can get your books and anything else they want to to find out about.
And all my, there's tons of videos, books, recordings, and it's all available. You don't have to pay for it if you don't want to. And of course, you can also, you know, order the books in physical form through whatever bookstores. But it is also all available.
Great.
For free.
Yeah. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing on this planet and, you know, the new ideas that you're bringing to the table. And I'm sure we could probably do a 3-hour show with that one.
Yeah.
Anyway. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we'll be in touch. You know, after I get through all this material, then I'll be able to go a little deeper into this.
Yeah. Thanks, James.
All right. Well, have a great day.
Yep. You too. Take care.
All right. Thanks again for listening, folks. I'm your host, James Gillen. We're signing off. Have a great day.